Hello, my name is Dr. Paul Wheatley Price. I'm a medical oncologist at the Ottawa Hospital and immediate past president of Lung Cancer Canada. Welcome to our podcast series called Lung Cancer Voices. In this series, I'll be interviewing patients, caregivers, healthcare professionals, and some of the leading lung cancer researchers in the country and indeed in the world to highlight important and relevant issues facing those affected by lung cancer. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to this Lung Cancer Voices podcast. This is part of our Canadian research series, and this is where we've invited the winners of some Lung Cancer Canada research grants to tell us about what's going on in lung cancer projects and lung cancer research in Canada. So I'm delighted to welcome my friend, Roz Juergens, to the podcast. Welcome, Roz.
Thank you, Paul. My pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
I should say welcome back because, of course, you've been on the podcast before. Dr. Juergens is an associate professor in medical oncology at McMaster in Hamilton. She runs the clinical trials program at the Jurovinsky Cancer Center. Roz and I have worked together on, lots of things over the years. And in particular at Lung Cancer Canada, Roz is the chair of our medical advisory committee. But today, we're not talking about that. We're talking about her research winning grant. And I should just introduce this grant to listeners. This was a joint award. We gave two awards, actually, with a collaboration supported by the pharmaceutical company Pfizer. And they've worked with us at Lung Cancer Canada, but also the Lung Health Foundation and the Association Pulmonaire de Quebec. And we've given out two grants. And the title of this grant competition is Improving the Care and Outcomes of Canadians Living with Metastatic Non-Small Cell Lung Cancer. So congrats, Roz, on winning the award. A couple of things before I let you do the talking and I'll shut up. This particular grant, there's specific areas that we were seeking winners for. And in particular, the topics of some highlighted interest are improving health equity in metastatic non-small cell lung cancer by addressing disparities for patients marginalized due to age, race, geography, income, or other factors. Now, there were other areas of interest for this grant, but I won't kind of go through all those now because really Roz's project was really looking at an equity issue. So we were kind of delighted that she's won that award. I should say, and just finally, before we get into it, that there's no sort of nepotism involved here, that it's, Paul Wheatley Price at Lung Cancer Canada giving Lung Cancer Canada's own Roz Juergens this great award. There was a, an impartial panel, scientific panel that adjudicated all the applications, now including people from Lung Cancer Canada, but also from Association Pulmonaire de Quebec and the Lung Health Foundation. So congrats, Roz. To start with, maybe you could just tell us what was the title of your project and what's it all about?
Well, thanks, Paul. I think anyone who practices in the space of lung cancer oncology knows that we're very fortunate in that we now have learned so much about lung cancer, and we now know that lung cancer isn't just one disease. And one of the blessings and curses of this knowledge is that in order to make a treatment plan for our patients, especially those with stage four disease, but now even more so even with early stage disease, we really need to understand the biology of their cancer. And part of understanding the biology of someone's cancer is understanding, are there any particular parts about this cancer that we can take a hold of, any Achilles heels that we can grab onto that will allow us to personalize the care for these cancer patients and to provide the treatment that's going to have the highest likelihood of doing things like shrinking the cancer, the highest likelihood of keeping it shrunk for as long as we can, and ideally letting these people live longer lives. And so we need to do something called molecular profiling. And we're fortunate that we have actually expanded access to molecular profiling to almost every cancer patient across the country through provincial funding for something called next generation sequencing. This is a test we do on a biopsy to be able to tell us whether or not patients have something called mutations. Scary word, right? I'm not talking about X-Men or Ninja Turtles running around. These are abnormalities that are found in the cancer cells themselves that we can sometimes take advantage of.
And Ros, you know, in the podcast, probably people have listened to this before. There's various previous podcasts in the series about molecular testing and about some of the subtypes, EGFR and ALK, and some of the rarer mutations. Yeah, it's important, isn't it, that it gets done. But now you're talking about taking this from an equity, an equity angle. Maybe tell us a little bit about Hamilton and your cancer center and the area of Ontario that you serve and what
yeah, that's
that
looks fantastic.
Like.
You know, most folks have likely heard of Hamilton. You know, Hamilton is a city in southwestern Ontario. You know, our population is just over about 500,000, but the catchment for our area is over 2 million people that span all the way down from Niagara Falls up past us westward, past Brantford, and then eastward into the Burlington, Oakville areas, and northwards all the way up to Kitchener, Waterloo. Our center actually does the molecular testing for that entire region. So we do testing for the Grand River Cancer Center, which is in Kitchener-Waterloo. We catch for Cambridge, Burlington, Niagara Falls, St. Catharines, Brantford, et cetera. So we've actually got quite a diverse area that we serve. And if we look at these patients, there's different needs for different places. And we have lots of hospitals and lots of access to healthcare within Hamilton proper. But it doesn't take long before you actually get into more rural areas. So the whole point of this project is actually not to be improving things that we're doing in the city. Lots of things go into improving things here in the city, but our goal is actually to try to help some of our community practices. I focus specifically on Burlington. So Burlington is, Brantford. Brantford is west of us. Brantford sits right next to Six Nations, which is one of the largest Aboriginal reserves in Ontario. And so many patients who are Aboriginal who have lung cancer come through our Brantford outpost. And then if we go down to the Niagara region, it's a huge farming community. The patients who come from these catchments are often older patients. Now we know lung cancer patients already have a median age in the early 70s. So we see patients who are even older than that. Patients who are struggling to get even rides to be able to come in to get things like biopsies. So the question that this research proposal is asking is, can we be smarter? Is there an opportunity for us to integrate something called a liquid biopsy to try to help to quicken the turnaround for us to be able to make medical decisions about our patients from some of our satellite community sites? Because they have an extra hurdle that people who come from the city don't have, which is that their tissue has to take an extra journey. Their biopsy may be done locally, but that tissue has to be sent in centrally to the city, which adds extra delays for these folks who may have already had delays in getting their tissue diagnosis.
Right. Tell me, Ros. So I've got a map of southwestern Ontario up in front of me now, because I don't often come down to your part of the province. How long would it take, let's say someone had a biopsy in Brantford, to get all of that testing? And how long does the process normally take, as they're not doing the EGFR and ALK and next generation sequencing there? And because there's a whole lot of stuff, is you've got to get the biopsy, and then it's got to be assessed locally, and then it's got to be packaged, and then it sits on some dock for a while or waiting to be shipped, and then it gets unpackaged and reviewed and tested. And how long does that all take?
Yeah, so if we think about this, by the time we recognize there's a problem, right? So that means somebody's already had something like a CT scan that has shown that this person likely has cancer. They then have to get a biopsy booked. That wait is about 4 weeks when things are working well. So a month goes by, they actually get then the needle put into them in some way, shape, or form to get tissue out. You nailed it. They have to have local processing, and then it comes to us. So from needle into patient, to that medical oncologist having the information they need to make a decision, right now sits at around 8 to 9 weeks. And we know that lung cancers can double in size just in that stretch of time. The average doubling time for a lung cancer is just over 100 days. So these patients are waiting for us to try to make our most precise decision. In the meantime, their cancer could have doubled in size while we're waiting for that information, Paul.
Right. Yeah, we should mention, shouldn't we, Ros, that a couple of years ago, Canadian Partnership Against Cancer came out with a report on lung cancer and equity, and it really highlighted that people from Indigenous communities, people from rural communities, from lower socioeconomic groups, a lot of the populations that you've described in the region around Hamilton, those sections of society who get lung cancer do worse. They're more likely to be diagnosed at advanced stages. They have shorter survival. So you're describing this population. So now your project then is trying to take that 9 weeks. One, what are you shooting for? If you've got a target, and secondly, how are you doing it? I mean, and I guess that's what this research project is.
Yeah. So we're trying to shave 3 to 4 weeks off of that time frame. So to give people a month back, which would be fantastic. And so how we're doing that is, at the time that the decision is made for the patient to have a biopsy for what is presumed metastatic lung cancer, we're going to have the patient stop in the lab, and they're going to have 2 tubes of blood drawn, just like you would have blood drawn to check your red blood cell count. We're going to draw 2 tubes of blood in an effort to try to see if we can find little bits of cancer cells floating around, and use that DNA and RNA to be able to do the same test I would otherwise do on tumor.
And we've had previous podcasts specifically around liquid biopsies. I think Dr. Lale and Dr. Gandara actually did one on that. So yeah, people could go onto the Lung Cancer Canada website, look back through the archives. We're up to about 70 pods now. So that's the next generation sequencing from a blood test. The idea that what cancer cells, some of them naturally die, release their genetic material into the bloodstream, and your 2 tubes, how reliable are they at picking it up?
Well, that's the piece that we're trying to answer in this study, is we're trying to figure out how many patients we might be able to either A, reduce the amount of time that it takes for them to get their complete package diagnosis, and then B, one of the other things I'm interested in is whether or not we could actually then not potentially have to do that same testing on tissue. That's a question.
Avoid the biopsy altogether?
No, I don't think you can avoid the biopsy, because I still need a couple of other tests that I can't do through a liquid biopsy, such as something called PD-L1. But gosh, you know, we've just talked about how much progress we have made, Paul, with how we treat our lung cancer patients. And the only way we make progress is through being able to have patients participate in things called clinical trials, where we're evaluating new treatments in an effort to try to advance the field. And one of the biggest reasons that people end up not being able to participate in clinical trials is lung biopsies are so small. Many of them, the entire biopsy is used up just trying to make the diagnosis. And that leaves nothing left for a patient to be able to participate in a clinical trial. And many clinical trials do require that we send some of that diagnostic material. Yeah. So my hope is we spare some of that tissue so that these people have the entire panacea of options for them, standard of care or clinical trials.
Okay. So you're aiming to get faster diagnosis, get this information more quickly. Maybe if you find a mutation, you have that information right away. Then the actual biopsy still has to happen, because PD-L1, which we need for immunotherapy, can't yet be done on blood tests, but I'm guessing that research is happening. So this all sounds positive. It's kind of clear to see why you won the grant, Ross. Where are you up to, just in the last few minutes, where are you up to with the research project right now, and when can we anticipate getting results from you?
So right now we're just finishing something called the validation, Paul. And what we're doing is we're taking people who have known mutations, and we're collecting those tubes of blood just to make sure the assay that we're using is doing its best job of finding those mutations. So that should be finishing up here in the next couple of months. In the meantime, we are in the process of getting our ethics approval, because again, this is a multi-center project and we're doing this at our community sites. So once we have that, we're going to start. And the goal is we're actually trying to see how many different locations in our general vicinity we can actually have participate, because the more folks in some of these community locations that we can help, the better it is.
Do you see, I guess not specifically for this research project, but kind of imagining, let's just imagine ahead that it's successful. And let's imagine there's a day when PD-L1, the other component, can be identified on the same blood test. Do you see a day coming, Roz, when when somebody has that suspicion of lung cancer, the tissue biopsy is not needed, and just people can immediately get some sort of imaging, CT scans, PET scans, and this blood test, and be diagnosed within days. Because you're talking about months. You're talking about months to sort of less months or weeks. But do you see a future of this being days?
You're asking about some really exciting stuff, Paul. So, you know, right now we're not there, right? Right now I still need an anatomic pathologist to tell me, you know, what do these cells look like under the microscope? There's several different types of lung cancer. There's something called small cell lung cancer. It describes it nicely. They're little tiny small cells. There's large cell. There's something called adenocarcinoma and something called squamous cell carcinoma. And I actually tailor things like chemotherapy based on what the pathologist tells me they see with their eyes. I tailor other therapies like immunotherapy on that PD-L1 test, and then I tailor targeted therapies based on that next generation sequencing. But there's been some really exciting research coming out of multiple big centers that are looking at trying to move that needle and being able to use things like liquid biopsies, for example, in conjunction with screening, trying to make things like CT screening more specific, or even being able to detect that someone is at risk for cancer in the future. So I honestly do believe that in the next decade, we're going to be in a space where we can screen for things with liquid biopsies, but you know, that's still a ways off.
But your work is part of that story and part of that progress. So this doesn't sound too syrupy. On behalf of the lung cancer community, Ross, thank you for the work you're doing. And congratulations again for this award. For those listening who are interested, the next round of this grant process, so this is this collaboration between Lung Cancer Canada, Pfizer, the Lung Health Foundation, and the Association Pulmonaire de Quebec, the next call for grant proposals will be coming out in early 2024. So watch out for that if you're interested in applying. I don't think the details are kind of finalized yet, but you know, equity is likely to remain an important component of that. Ros, are there any questions that you feel I should have asked you about your project that I didn't, or any sort of final thoughts that you've got about either this project or what your next follow-on project's going to be?
Well, I think the one thing that is exciting about it is, Paul, is, you know, this is something that I'm doing in the Hamilton region, but because it's something simple like a blood test, right? We're actually very good at being able to ship blood across the country very readily. So if we can get centers of excellence in a few areas across the country, it's actually quite feasible for someone from Cape Breton to have their blood sent in and tested. And you don't necessarily have to have this type of testing available at every community lab. So I think this is something that's easily scalable in a cost-efficient fashion. We just have to get the government to say, hey, we feel that this is a value, and to recognize how we can integrate this into our current flow.
And actually, there's a project in Ontario, the Program in Evidence-Based Care, is looking at that liquid biopsy and how to incorporate it. So in Ontario, at least, hopefully we'll get some progress on that. Ros, I think our time is up. It's a Friday afternoon as we're recording this. And so, you know, it's Friday afternoon. So enough said. Thank you so much for spending time with me on the podcast today. And congratulations again. And please apply next year.
Yeah, and otherwise,
have a good weekend.
It's been my pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks to our producer, Ryan Mullen. Please send us your feedback, like and follow us on Facebook at LungCan, on Twitter at LungCancer_Can, and on Instagram at LungCancerCanada. For more information about lung cancer or to donate, volunteer or share your story, visit our webpage at LungCancerCanada.ca.